Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
And we happen to have two in the studio today. From Prout Financial Design, welcome to New Retirement Radio, Mr. Dennis Prout. CFP, Certified Financial Planner, is in the house. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Ron. And joining us today is Heidi Thompson, Elite Advisor with Ed Slott and Company, as well as Shay Pataja. Client
Silence.
Experience Officer, CXO. I was interrupting my own thought process I just said your name normally. What's that all about anyway?
Yeah, I don't like that. Shea Pataja.
What's that
the
all
Finn
about?
The Finn who sounds Italian. And Heidi at our office is a financial advisor.
She is.
She's here today.
And
good
a
morning.
Darn good one.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to have her with us today as well, because we have a lot to talk about. And today we are starting a new division of the program, if
new
you
segment,
will.
Yep.
A new segment, Heidi's Helpful Hints. And she's bringing it today, some great information on the 60-day rollover, which we'll talk about after the first break. So we have a lot to talk about today. Here it is. When should your children get their inheritance? When should your children get their inheritance? And there's a plethora of things that go along with this. When should they get it? It's not just when, but perhaps how. And remembering some of the basics as well. When should your children get their inheritance? How can you tell if your children are ready to responsibly receive an inheritance? And it may not just be about them. It's about their spouses. It may be about their age. It may be about their own financial wherewithal. Well, one's wealthy, one isn't. Do we make any delineation given that that's the case? How do we decide that? How do we work through those things? Is it even something we should decide? All of those questions are great questions. One of the points I wanted to make about this, allow yourself to think through this. What does that mean? It means some of your doubts and concerns. Obviously not all of them. Some of them may well be very sensible to have. So allowing yourself to express those doubts, not only with your spouse, but perhaps your attorney, as well as your financial advisor. Well, John is never going to, as an example, John is never going to have trouble with money. He always treated it so carefully and was so conservative. And yet Stu, here on the other side, money flows through his hands like water. He just never got it, but it wasn't that important to him either. So he held loosely to it, and indeed it held loosely to him. So you see there immediately the differentiators. Maybe that you want to have some more controls for Stu in this particular example, but not for John.
Maybe it's not when they get their inheritance, but when you tell them what they're getting.
Well, you make a great point. When you telling them how they're going to get it. I was talking with an estate planning attorney last week, and I said, I've always told people, talk to your children. You need to tell your children what's going on. I said it was always easy for me to say that until I did it myself. So as a part of this, no, I am preaching to myself as well. Because I think through this stuff, and I've started to have those conversations with children, and it's not easy. And in fact, I told you two this morning, that conversation I had with the children to tell them that the retirement accounts were going to charity when both Jill and I passed away, it was one of the more difficult conversations I've ever had. Honestly, the thoughts going through my head was, they might think, well, Dad, do you love us? You know, why are you doing that to us? You know, possibly a defensive reaction. That wasn't the case at all. In that case, I was lucky, I felt, because they were completely understanding. At least they showed that. But it looked that way. But you see where I'm going. These are not easy conversations to have. But to get through this, you can really leverage what is happening if you can get through these issues.
So wait, I'm trying to get a visual here. Did you and Jill sit them down?
We were all sitting together.
With their spouses or just
and,
the kids?
The spouses were there.
Oh.
Yes. And so there were six of us, I think, at that time, sitting around together. And I was holding my breath the whole time we were talking about that. I honestly didn't know how they were going to respond. So, you know, if we have life insurance in force at that time, they're going to get that if something were to happen to Jill and myself. But, okay, that's part of it. The life insurance? What is that? They get that? Yes. Because they're contingent beneficiaries. Oh, yeah. So there's 500,000 there or a million or whatever it is. It's tax-free. It's tax-free when they receive it. That is part of the estate. So is the retirement account. Well, yeah, I know the IRA is. They're going to receive that, too. Do they know that they're named as contingent beneficiaries? Well, they know we have a trust. Now, there's a great quote from Tom Brokaw. He had his daughter on the show, I don't know, 5-6 years ago.
No, they were doing some interview. It was some, public...
It was a TED talk.
She was with the writer series. She was here at the Traverse City writer series.
Okay. Well, anyway, it was recorded that interview with her father, and he almost blandly mentioned, "Well, yes, we've got a living will," or however he said that, and our daughter, whatever her name is, she knows that, and you know, he got through talking, and she said, "Dad, I didn't have any idea that that's what you'd done."
She said it live, yeah.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Then, you know, it took him a minute to recover. He was stunned. So do they even know that you've got a trust? You may have thought you've told them, but, you know, and then do they know what the trust says? Well, I don't know that we're ready for them to know what it says. Why not? Are they old enough? So pushing yourself in some cases to do this, yes?
Question.
I see that hand.
Yes, question. When your clients come in and sit down with you, do they know most of the time what their plan is? Like when you ask them that question, do they know? Are they bashful about it? Are they clear?
No, that is a great question. Many times they don't know how to do this. Okay, we were both married before. She has her children. I have mine. How am I going? He or she is sitting with a spouse. Let's say in this case, she's got the retirement account from the previous spouse that's significant. Well, she knows that he well may need parts of that for income when she passes away. But yet she has already told her own children, yes, you are going to get that retirement account. Yes, many times. And it's, let's say, I don't know, $500,000. You will get that amount. Well, he's sitting there at the time when they're doing the beneficiary paperwork. They've already done this with the attorney. He's had the spouse has had that. He understands this, but she can't stand the thought that he's not going to get a part of that income because she knows it's not going to be enough. So she says, all right. He's the primary beneficiary. I know that it'll get it to them. But then it gets more complex. The two children are not the same financially. One, in this case, not any problem. Let's use John and Stu. Was it John and Stu? Whatever. Anyway, the two gentlemen. The one handles money well. The other one does not. She does not know how to name them as contingent. She wants to name them as contingents, but it's $500,000 or $750 or whatever it is. She doesn't know that she wants the one to get a lump sum. Mm-hmm. First, a review of what's in your estate. What's in your estate? The life insurance, the annuities, the TSA accounts, the 403Bs, the IRAs, the cottage. Oh, yeah, there's that. How do we get that over to them? Should that be in the trust? I don't know. Should it? Maybe it needs to be. Well, it's in Ohio. A cottage in Ohio? Well, you know, whatever, right? Then, charitable. Are you charitably orientated at all? Well, yes. St. Jude's Children's Hospital. That seems to be a common theme with clients. All right. Have you considered naming a contingent beneficiary as St. Jude's? Or, if the spouse has passed away, even a primary beneficiary? Best money, in almost every case, to give to a charity is a portion of a retirement account. So if you've named a primary beneficiary on a retirement account and a contingent beneficiary, let's say the primary is the spouse in our previous example, he or she could disclaim a portion of it to the contingent beneficiary. So, I don't know, let's say it's $500,000. It's an IRA. Sue, in this particular case, wants all four children to get a small portion of the estate. Best portion may be the retirement account. If they're all four named, she could selectively disclaim $10,000 apiece to each of the children, and they would get it directly through that retirement account. Is that ever powerful? Never heard of such a thing. The disclaimer. Yes, it's an article we did a while back in the Grand Traverse Business Journal. You see how these conversations with a great financial advisor, where they're able to walk you through not only the fact that you have a trust, but how it's going to work with the accounts themselves. What are the mechanics of how that works? Well, I don't want to look under the hood and see how the engine works. Do I have to do that? No, you don't have to do that. But it's great to walk through in terms of how could I make this work, given that these scenarios pop up, which is very much real to life. How can we do that? So being able to walk through it before the fact is a great planning exercise. That's why we have beneficiary meetings, so that the children can see us. Oh, that's where all the chocolate is that Mom and Dad talks about all the time, and the coffee's not bad either. And they can see us so they can get a comfort level, given that the worst happens. Mom and Dad are both passed away in a car accident, whatever it might be. Who wants to go there? But at least then they can know that they need to go see someone, because those beneficiary IRAs are not as simple as what you might think. There's about five things they want to be aware of when getting a beneficiary IRA. To avoid all the tax. And to take it as responsibly as you wanted them to. Well, avoiding the tax. 20, 25, 30% of the account value may be taxed if the beneficiary IRA is not taken properly. Just like that, a big slice of the pie gone. That would mean at 30%, $1 million in an IRA goes to $700 in the flash of an eye. Just like that, gone. If it's not done properly. Just like that. And thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, says Bill Marsh.
Do you want to hear the clip from...
Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. This is Tom Brokaw and his daughter.
Thanks, Ron, for doing this.
Tom Brokaw. Well, they don't have her in the article that explains this. They're not posting her name, but it'll come through here. This was at a TED event, as you said, Dennis.
Let's talk about what I should be preparing for. You know I have a living will, and your mother does as well. What else should we have? And what is it about that living will that we should know?
Well, first of all, I think the audience should know that this is really unscripted. And my dad and I have been going back and forth about what exactly we should talk about. And I'm going to take this opportunity to put him on the spot here, because I have no idea about your living will.
And unfortunately, I don't know a lot about my living will.
Well,
in fact, I'm not even sure where it is at this point.
That's the case for the majority of people, actually. only 30% of Americans have prepared any kind of advance directive or living will, and they can be used interchangeably. But, you know, most people have a pretty clear idea of how they want to live their life and how they want to die. So it's really remarkable that we don't take the time, and it really should be when we're, you know, as soon as we're of age that we start to think about this. I had a near-fatal ski accident when I was 27. Came very close. I suffered a head injury. I thankfully came out with most of my neurons firing, but I had prepared no kind of directive at that stage of my life, even though I was a ER resident. And I'm finding more and more now that people who have prepared some sort of statement for their family leave their family in much better shape, emotionally, financially, and otherwise, than those who haven't. And it has occurred to me that my own parents have been quite remiss in telling me, you know, what's important to them. So I want to turn it back to you, Dad. I want to ask you, you know, what makes your life meaningful, and what kinds of decisions should I make on your behalf if you weren't able to speak for yourself?
Well, I think one of the things that you want to do is that I'm...
So there's a little bit of the point Dennis was making there. Tom Brokaw. It's not Meredith, I think, is his wife. I apologize. I don't have his wife's name handy, but you can hear their conversation there.
Thanks for finding it anyway, Ron. That's great. So back here in Traverse City, Heidi was telling Shay and I the story of her own parents on some of that journey before the show when we were working through things. And so if you would share a bit about your own parents' story and their process of working through this, the estate planning side.
Well, my parents have always been planners, so they always had a trust or a will, but we were, as the children, unaware of what exactly it was and what exactly it said. And it was only in my dad's final 5 years that he really started noticing that he couldn't handle things and organize things like he used to. So he did start reaching out, and I went to him, and he didn't think he had enough that he needed to have extra help. And I'm like, Dad, you do. And we do have some lake property that we want it to go on in our family. So it was important for him to sit down, and we had some beneficiary meetings, like we call it our office, which Janice recommends, that clients have with their children. And so we did that at home. And they just told us what they had planned for us. And that way we could talk about and find out, is everybody interested in owning the house? Is everybody interested in this? But it just gave us some peace of mind that as my dad was declining in health, that he had taken care of this. And it wasn't that big black hole that you gingerly step around. It really took off a lot of that anxiety. And so it really helped our family transition when my dad did pass away.
So you had your own family meeting and discussing all this and went through the details, and your parents shared with you what they were thinking. And then I think the cool part is they were asking you if you all wanted to participate in the cottage itself.
Right.
Because of the cost that they were going to be changing, in essence, when they both pass away.
Right. And there are so many things, the taxes and all those expenses that go with it, and can we keep this legacy going for a couple more generations? And we are all really excited, and that's what we want to try to do.
That's great.
Yeah, and for him, it took that health scare for him to see that it was serious.
Right.
Right. And we were together. We were having dinner, and you said, well, the doctor gave him, 5 to 8 more years.
Yep.
And then he unexpectedly passed away that week.
Yep.
So it's just interesting how sometimes, like you said, like tiptoeing around that, and that he was wise enough to bring you guys in on it. And I think two parents want to preserve the relationships between their kids,
right,
and they're trying to keep it as fair as possible within reason. And I mentioned that too, Dennis. Well, if it were me, I would just make it fair across the board. And you said, well, it's not that easy.
And the saying goes, love your children equally, but treat them uniquely.
Mm-hmm.
So it can appear, possibly from their standpoint, that they're being treated very differently, and they may well be. But what they don't understand always is that the parents have thought this through, and they see things perhaps that the children, because it's up close and personal, we're all there, we get that, just don't see it.
Mm.
We don't see it when we're that close,
mm-hmm.
but they do. So they may see that, in this case, the son's spouse, they have some concerns about her and him getting the inheritance and or their own relationship continuing on, as they hope it will, perhaps. So you see the variables that can occur there can be significant. And for that reason, in this particular example, that the parents may decide that particular son, they're going to have him receive that inheritance over a period of time. Perhaps at some of it at age 35, some at 45, and some at 55, which they can do with a trust. Mm-hmm. A trust can control that in terms of it's the same dollar amount, perhaps. If it's a $2 million IRA, all of a sudden, the stakes go incredibly that much higher.
Mm-hmm.
If they're 50% beneficiaries, that means if they both pass away relatively quickly, it's $1 million apiece in two beneficiary IRAs. Well, they can draw the funds from a beneficiary IRA, the children, when inherited, with no penalties. It is taxable, but you can see how that all of a sudden, what took you years to accumulate, decades, they can have spent down in a very short period of time, and the stats are really brutal on that. In fact, you had had those maybe a month or so ago,
mm-hmm.
Shay. The number of beneficiary IRA assets spent down after 1 year is like 90.
It's pretty high.
Yeah.
I don't remember specifically, but it's high.
98-99%, I think it was. So, Shay, may I ask you a question? How would you feel, or walk through that, if your parents treated you differently from Tech and McRae? How would you deal with that, or how would you work through that?
I mean, clearly I'm going to be the child that is given the most.
As long as they treat you better, right?
I was just going to say, right? I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
I don't know. I think it's different when you're the kid that's home, right? They mm-hmm. both live far away, so I don't know how that will work. I came to their meeting to talk about
sure.
their retirement planning, and
yeah.
that gave me a lot of peace of mind to see that they had planned and are planning, and that was fun for me to see. But we haven't had the beneficiary conversation. But yeah, I don't know. That'd be interesting. I would think that they've helped all of us equally in different ways in our adult life, and that's been really evident. So the way they give to each of us is very generous, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of us have needed money, others have needed help with our houses or kids. You know, they've given generously, and I think my parents would be very fair in how they handle the beneficiary, because both of their families have had very different stories. And so they've experienced the pain of that as a sibling and as a child, and I don't think they want to repeat that, if possible, among us. So
you see them being as intentional as they possibly can in this.
Yeah, I have very generous parents, and not with money per se. It's more time and talent, mm-hmm. and they're generous to everyone that comes into their home. That's just how they are. So I don't foresee that being an issue, but it'd be interesting to have the conversation. But being the kid that's home, I think I do have more information, and I work obviously for Prout, so
sure.
this is my wheelhouse. And the other siblings are totally fine with that. They're like, by all means. Yeah.
So you guys have had your share of communication about it already.
Yeah, and we're close as siblings.
It's great.
You know, thanks to group text messaging.
Excellent.
And FaceTime. I mean, yeah. those things help, oddly enough.
Great. Well, thanks for allowing me to put you on the spot with that question, because
yeah.
I think that's what all of us want to know in regards to how are we going to respond. And for me, it may be trying to control that too much, how they're going to respond. Letting them have their response, but yet doing the best that we can in light of who they are, their capabilities, and not just them, their spouses and their children, our grandchildren as well. In thinking through that in the long view, because all of a sudden it's not just three, it's six, seven, eight people mm-hmm. involved. So
I think the danger
huge.
Comes when people feel entitled to something. If you get anything from anyone, right, it's a gift. So
yes.
I think keeping that perspective for me, my dad always said, either you give it all for free or you charge 100%. That's what how he was raised. You know, if you give to someone, don't ever expect that to come back. Mm-hmm. If you want to charge for something, then charge them the full price. Like, keep it, that's just how you keep it clean, the exchange between two people. So I think if you look at inheritance that way, it's a gift.
Yes.
That would be helpful. But I know that's hard. I know it's really hard because it's relationships. That's there's that quote, blood may be thicker than water, but blood clots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where it gets sticky, obviously.
I think understanding that you have options as a parent and as a child in receiving the funds and in giving the funds.
Mm-hmm.
There are significant options which you may not have investigated. What a great conversation to have in terms of seeing an attorney as well as making this happen with your financial advisor. I mean, really, talking about this. How is this going to work? And addressing the best gift you give to a really good financial advisor is telling them what you're concerned about with as much as you can with your spouse right there, but also your children, and if they're children from split other relationships mm-hmm. as well. Here's what I'm concerned about. How do we get through this? How do we get through these issues? Now, you don't have to discuss, you know, all of the details, but the major ones in terms of their abilities to handle finance and or what your options might be so you can weigh them together. Incredible power and ability to say, well, my gosh, you know, this son doesn't get it. I'm not comfortable with him receiving it right now. Okay, so what are your options? And then maybe 10 years later, we've had this situation in our office, getting the call from the father, you know what, that son that I expressed those concerns about? I'm much more confident today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a fun conversation to have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my 20s, that would have never been a good idea for my parents to put me in charge of anything.
The perspective of time. Let's take a break, shall we? And then we'll come back with Heidi's hints.
What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about avoiding 60-day rollover mistakes in 5 easy steps. And you may be like, a 60-day rollover, why would I do that? Well, you may do that if you're moving funds from one qualified account to another. Or maybe you just left a job and you're looking to move your 401k funds over to an IRA. Or maybe simply you're just trying to get organized and consolidate some of those IRA accounts into one. Whatever the case, a 60-day rollover may be something that you're considering. So before we go into the hints, maybe it'd be helpful if I told you what a 60-day rollover really is. A 60-day rollover is the distribution of funds from a qualifying retirement account payable to the account owner, who then has 60 days to redeposit the funds into another qualifying retirement account. So my first helpful hint is, well, maybe you just don't do one, which sounds a little funny, but you can avoid a lot of problems if you do a trustee-to-trustee transfer, and that's when you move your funds directly from one custodian to another, and you never even touch it. So another way to not do one is to have the check from your initial custodian make it out to the transferring custodian. So you don't have the check come in your name. It's made out to your new custodian for your benefit. So that way you don't even put your hands on it. Then the third hint that I have is that you should keep track of when you receive the check. That 60 days starts from the day you receive the check and when it was issued. And a couple days can make a difference from when it was issued to when you receive it. Because if you miss that 60 days and you don't get that money back into a qualifying account, you can't make that up. You can't fix that. That's an unfixable error.
So what's the penalty if you don't get it back in there on the amount?
Well, it's all taxable. Plus, if you're under 59.5, you have an additional penalty from the IRS. And so it starts to add up.
It could be 30 to 40% given your tax bracket as well as the penalties that may occur if you're under the age of 59.5.
Yep. So it's important to keep track of that. Another way is to make sure, take 5 minutes after the transaction's over, take 5 minutes, check your accounts. Make sure you put it in the right account. That it didn't, you told them, hey, put it in that account where I have this stock. Well, maybe you have stock in a qualifying and a non-qualifying account, and it went in the wrong one. So just make sure, take that 5 minutes, because then you can still take it out and put it back in the right account. And then just be aware that you can only do this 60-day thing once a year. And when I say once a year, I don't mean from January to December. I mean 365 days. So if you did a 60-day rollover on February 12th of 1 year, you can't do another one until February 12th. And that is for all your IRAs. If you have more than one, you do not want to do a rollover from your other accounts, your other IRA accounts as well. You can only do once per year. So that's my helpful hints for
all
this
right.
week.
Yep, and those will be in every email blast that I send out on Thursdays with a link to our website. You can actually go to our website right now on the home page. It says Continuing Ed at the bottom. You click there, and today's five helpful hints from Heidi are there in the Ed slot portion of our website. Heidi's disclosure is securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA SIPC, advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, CAS, a registered investment advisor.
Thanks, Shay.
You're welcome. Thanks,
Heidi. Thanks a lot. One last thing, the disclaimer we mentioned briefly. We have a whole module you'll hear from Ed Slott and Company on how to do the disclaimer and how it might work for you. If you'd like it, just call our office. We'll be happy to send it to you, or, of course, you can drop by. It's called the Disclaimer, the Complete IRA Care Solution Disclaimer. All right?
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.